Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Land of Sky Regional Council weekly call. And I just realized, and thank you to Drew for pointing that out to me. Yesterday, when I sent out the invitation for this meeting, I failed to include the meeting link. So I guess y'all were able to join based on having the previous meeting link. So I appreciate y'all for joining us today. Good news is we didn't have a lot on the agenda beyond Drew, but I was going to provide a little overview of Land of Sky Regional Council, and hope everyone will give you folks a little better information on that and what Land of Sky does. We won't meet next week. A week from today is Thanksgiving, so it's hard to believe Thanksgiving is almost here. But the week following, which is December 3rd, we're going to have North Carolina Treasurer Dale Falwell will be joining us. So we're excited that Treasurer Falwell can share with us. And the Treasurer's Office is a critically important role in North Carolina. Treasurer oversees over $100 billion in our state's pension fund, manages the state health plan, and also oversees local government and state government finance. So those are critical roles, but we're honored to have Drew Christie with the governor's office with us today. So I will turn it over to Drew. And Drew, thank you for joining us today. I know a lot's happening in Raleigh from the governor's office as we see an increase in COVID-19 cases.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me. And thank you for Land of Sky Regional Council for always hosting these meetings. They have been very valuable to myself, and I hope for everyone as well, too. So as per usual, I'll go over numbers first and then move on to some other talking points. So looking at the numbers, there are a total of 325,158 total cases thus far in COVID-19. Yesterday, we did see our highest day ever in cases reported. There were 4,296 cases reported yesterday. That's not good news. There have been almost 4.8 million tests completed thus far, and it's looking like, based on the numbers from 2 days ago, we had one of our highest days ever in hospitalizations, with 1,538 people hospitalized on Tuesday. Again, overall, that number is based on overall last reported yesterday on the 18th, on Wednesday. So those numbers are not trending in the right direction. And I'll cover more in detail about what the governor announced this past Tuesday. But moving over to unemployment numbers, unemployment claim numbers, there have been a total of $8.7 billion paid out. This is updated as of today. So that's good news. Another really good news here is we're working, DES is working through the pending claims that are left. They're down to only 8,234 cases pending state resolution. There have been a total of 922,956 claimants paid out, and there have been, let me see if I can see that here, 2.7 million, almost 2.8 million claims filed from March 15th through November 8th. So it's a lot of claims that have been filed and a lot of folks that have been paid out for unemployment insurance benefits. So moving on to what the governor announced on Tuesday, the state has introduced a new COVID-19 county alert system to pinpoint counties with the highest levels of viral spread and offer specific recommendations to bring these numbers down. This system will help give local leaders another tool to understand how their county is faring and to make decisions about actions to slow the viral spread. The map, which highlights all 100 counties, will be updated every 4 weeks. The system includes or uses metrics informed by White House Coronavirus Task Force and North Carolina's key metrics to categorize counties into three tiers. And these three tiers are yellow, which means significant community spread, orange, which is substantial community spread, and red, which is critical community spread. Because no one metric provides a complete picture, the COVID-19 county alert system uses a combination of three metrics: case rate, the percent of tests that are positive, and hospital impact within the county. And the way that breaks down is as follows. So for case rate is the number of new cases in 14 days per 100,000 people. And I'm only going to highlight the two important metrics here, the orange and the red. So for orange, which is substantial, it's 101 to 200 cases per 100,000 people per 100,000 people in the past 14 days with at least 21 cases in 14 days. And for red, the case rate metric is greater than 200 cases or 200 cases per 100,000 people in 14 days with at least 42 new cases in 14 days. The next metric is percent positive, and that one's obvious. And percent positive for the orange is 8 to 10%. And for red, it's greater than 10% positive. And then hospital impact, which is the composite score based on the impact that COVID-19 has had on hospitals, including percent of COVID-19 hospitalizations, COVID-19 related visits to the emergency department, staff open hospital beds, and critical staffing shortages over 14 days. So to kind of break all this down and the way Secretary Cohen explained it, even if your county has greater than 100 cases, it does not necessarily mean it will fall in the orange or red categories. It would have to be, for orange, it would be 101 cases to 200 cases, and it must meet one of the other categories, percent positive or hospital impact within the county. So if, just say, since I'm a resident of Buncombe County has 140 cases, new cases within the 14 days. And sorry, I'm not picking on Buncombe County. I'm just using that as an example here. But say it has 140 new cases, but only has a 6% positivity rate. It would still stay within the yellow category and not rise into the orange category. But if it has between 8 and 10% positivity rate, then it would fall within the orange category. So what all this means, it's a way for us, the alerts system includes recommendations for individuals, businesses, and community organizations and public officials in every county, as well as specific stepped up recommendations for orange and red counties. So we want to make sure that we're getting the word out and getting people actively engaged in the process, not just, hey, the state is asking you to do this and this is what it means. We're trying to give quantitative data for folks to view and see how their county is doing based on other counties and try and get community involvement and individuals involved in the process, because we do know the most effective way to slow the spread of COVID-19 is the three W's: to wear a face covering, to wash your hands frequently, and to wait at least 6 feet apart while indoors from other people. So we want to make sure that these key metrics are being followed, or the three W's are being followed, so we can get our numbers under control and move forward and try and reignite our economy the best way we can. And so you can find that more information about the alert system through DHHS's website. Let's see here. And so, as Governor Cooper stated on Tuesday, that if our metrics keep moving in the wrong direction, that the state would could be in a position of imposing additional requirements, either at the county or statewide level. And already Governor Cooper has acted to lower North Carolina's indoor mass gathering limit to 10 people. Governor Cooper and Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen also underscored the need, again, for people to wear a mask anytime they gather with people outside of their immediate household. As the holiday season approaches, North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services has released health guidance to help people celebrate safely as possible without spreading the virus. And lastly, Department of Health and Human Services will continue to update the COVID-19 dashboard, which is where I report all of my numbers from or to you from. Which will also, the data will also be including county level data. So you can view that at the DHHS's dashboard. And so with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you and for any questions that are out there.
Drew, we did have a question in the chat about how does that system account for travel between counties? I guess there is always a question of, you know, if someone positive test results, do they go back to someone's home county? So let's say I got a test in Henderson County, but I live in Buncombe County. You know, where would that positive test be reported?
The positive test would be reported wherever that individual actually lives. But that being said, as Secretary Cohen states quite often, make sure you answer your phone for the contact tracers so they can get an accurate count of where folks traveled to and who they interacted with, so they can trace back to see how that spread is affecting from their travel and work. And then moving on to the next question from David, I don't know about that link right there. I'll have to pull it up myself and see. So bear with me 1 second. I haven't actually looked at that map recently.
And maybe Drew, if you could just put your email in the chat, if folks want to reach out to you after the call, be glad to do that. I'm sure if it's a systematic problem, I'm sure somebody in Raleigh is working on it right now. If there's an IT issue. One thing came up and, in the last day is the broadband funding. It appears like we're not going to have the funding, whether it was the CARES Act restrictions or timing or other things that they thought they could allocate for broadband through the GREAT grants. Do you have any information on that? Or I know it's sort of a recently developing news story.
Yeah, I have very limited information about that thus far. I'm still trying to track down everything. But from my understanding of the issue and everything, it looks like that it's been determined that these projects are not eligible for CARES Act funding under the current U.S. Department of Treasury guidelines. But that's kind of all the information I have at this point in regards to the rural broadband. and the great grant fundings with the CARES Act.
I know there was a lot of not necessarily confusion, but lack of clarity in the legislature as far as what they could use CARES Act funding for and what they couldn't. So Andy Munn is on today's call. Andy, I don't want to put you on the spot, but have you heard an update on that? I know we had there had been an effort, and I thought there was bipartisan support in D.C., but I guess everything sort of just jams up on greater issues to provide states a little more flexibility on how they can spend their CARES Act dollars. Andy, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, that's about right. Unfortunately, it is pretty jammed up, and folks are still trying to work through how all that's going to work out. So unfortunately, we don't have much clarity on that at this point. But that'll likely come. I would anticipate in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
I hadn't reached out to you and Chris. I didn't really think we had a lot new to report, but is there anything you want to share legislatively, or do you think anything will happen before the inauguration?
I think there's still a chance that something's done at a federal level, but it really is a 50-50 shot, I think, at this point, with everything being up in the air. And President Trump hasn't conceded, and President-elect Biden is picking his team. So, who knows really how all that's going to work out. I think North Carolina is pretty much settled on all of the races here in our state. The one that's up in the air is the race for Supreme Court justice between Newby and Beasley. The margin is only about 400 votes, and I think with having Newby winning that race with 400 votes out of 5 million votes cast, to say that's tight is an understatement. I was shaking my head.
I mean, 400 or 500 votes is a tight election for a relatively small city council race, much less a statewide, race like that. That's phenomenal.
It's unbelievable.
The governor's race from 2016 seemed like a landslide, and it was 10,000 votes.
I mean, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. So I think they're doing a recount on that race. That's an important one for who controls the administrative office of the courts. It doesn't necessarily. It's not going to have any impact on the partisan makeup of the Supreme Court, but that's the only race really that's up in the air in North Carolina at this point. But to your earlier question, I think on the federal side, it's still we're still trying to sort through what's going to happen there.
Well, my fear is, and I don't know if you've heard any updated numbers, we probably won't see that to early 2021 when the General Assembly goes back into session, but, I'm fearful that even with the reserves and different pots of money, I know, they didn't spend quite as much money as they thought, because they were unable to agree to a budget, but I'm fearful, going in, unless there's additional federal assistance, it's going to be a pretty challenging year for legislators. Is that your perception as well?
It will be, certainly more so than the past several cycles or the past probably 6 or 8 years. On a positive note, I would say that North Carolina is in a better financial situation than most other states in the country right now. Having dealing with COVID and all the economic impacts of that, because we were projecting, I think, between a $4 or $5 billion shortfall in state revenues. That's still up in the air for a multitude of reasons, some of which include there was an extension of when you could file your return, your state tax returns, And so they're still trying to sort through all of that. But with the shortfall being between 4 and 5 billion, and the rainy day fund that the state's accumulated being, you know, 2 to 3 billion, the unemployment insurance reserves are in the, you know, $1 to $2 billion range. And then just unspent money that the state has, it's kind of a wash, I would say. Right now, I think there's nearly $8 billion in cash that the state has on hand. But, you know, some of those dollars are already allocated, some are not. So long story short, though, North Carolina is in probably one of the better positions to climb out of this COVID recession that we've experienced here this year. Time will tell. And you know, with the cases spiking now, and if we're going back into sort of a shutdown mode, you know, that could change. But of all the 50 states, North Carolina is in a pretty good spot.
Andy, thank you for sharing. We did get one question in the chat, and you've heard some discussion at the federal level. This might be an area where they could reach political compromise. Certainly at the state level, something's going to have to be done on infrastructure. You know, NCDOT's in a pretty bad financial position for various reasons. And do you see any traction there? I know the state chamber came out with sort of a blueprint to try to address that. You know, a lot of it are things oftentimes are politically sort of tricky.
Yeah, so the NCDOT problem it existed or came to fruition irrespective of the COVID situation. So that's going to need to be dealt with. And that can be handled in a number of different ways. You know, the gas tax is really not a solution that everyone can point to because of, just the increased fuel efficiency of vehicles. But I don't think major infrastructure, major transportation infrastructure, projects are being threatened by budget shortfalls at this point. But time will tell. We're still really trying to unpeel the onion here on this one.
Well, hopefully that onion will bloom and it will be very, very helpful. So I know a blooming onion may not be healthy for you at Outback, but we certainly want that onion to bloom. As you can tell, I might have ate one or two in my lifetime. But Andy, thank you for sharing that update. And that's a good segue. And again, I apologize for not sending the link when I sent out the invite for this meeting. So I'll try to do that next time. We're not going to meet next Thursday. That'll be Thanksgiving. So we'll give you that time to your family and hopefully you have a safe holiday. But on December 3rd, this is a good segue from Drew's presentation and from Andy's discussion. State Treasurer Falwell will be with us. So you know, he can give us his perspective, and maybe in the future we can have someone, you know, with DOT. And I know Tristan and the team, Vicky and the team at our MPO, RPO here at Land of Sky have been very helpful as well. So, Andy, thank you so much. Drew, appreciate you added your email to the chat if anyone has any questions. I'm going to try to share my screen, and if I fail to do that, then we'll end this call and not take much of your time, but just want to give a little background on Land of Sky and the departments and the programs that we offer. And so I want to start out with a video, and we'll see how this works. But So could y'all not hear the sound on those videos?
No.
Okay. Well, I'll try it one more time, and then if I fail to do that, you can go on the Land of Sky YouTube channel and view that. I don't know what I did wrong. I probably should have Christina help me with that. So I will defer to Christina do that in the future. So I just wanted to give you an update on Land of Sky Regional Council. And those videos I was trying to play were of our staff, and it's sort of a day in the life of what our various staff are doing. So again, you can go to our YouTube channel, or I can share that link, but it just really gave you the depth and the breadth of the work that happens with our organization every day, how we work with our local governments and our many partners throughout the region. So Land of Sky, we're over 50 years old. We began in 1966, and we're a lead regional organization designated as a local government by the state of North Carolina for service delivery. And North Carolina has 16 regional councils. So we're one of 16. And our friends and neighbors joining us are the Southwestern Commission to the west, Isothermal and High Country to the east. And so, we're really a regional service delivery organization. So in our region, we have 20 local governments, 16 municipalities, and four counties. And this is the mission statement of Land of Sky. And here's our commitment to our region. And earlier this year, we added some additional commitments to focus on diversity and inclusion, cultural, gender, racial, and ethnic diversity, in addition to what we had previously. And so our leadership team, we have an amazing leadership team outside of the executive director. They do amazing work. And we're governed by our board of delegates and our executive committee. And those, our governing body represent our member governments. And we have at-large delegates to represent minority interests, our economic development, and other regional partners. And so our budget, our local governments do pay dues, and that helps support our organization, but that's only about 2% of our budget. And so 98% of our budget comes from other sources. And so for every dollar in member dues, we leverage over $235,000 in additional funding for our region. And most of our local dues that our cities, towns, and counties pay, they go for grant matching requirements and for some expenses that our federal and state programs do not allow us to pay for. So our budget's somewhere, it's between $12 and $15 million usually. The number is lower at the beginning of the year, and as we receive additional funding throughout the year, that budget number will increase. And so we're also a lead economic development district for ARC and the EDA through the U.S. Department of Commerce. And we have several major programs, but we have other smaller programs as well. Our AAA, our Area Agency on Aging, Mountain Area Workforce Development Board, Economic Community Development. That's probably one of the most, broadest programs we have, because our ECD department does lots of different things, but they work with our local governments with infrastructure projects, with broadband, with planning services. And we also have contracts with local governments, including Buncombe County, to provide transportation. And so our administration and finance departments, we're pretty lean at Land of Sky, and we try to utilize our resources as efficiently as we can. And again, we manage over 100 grants on a yearly basis. So our accounting finance staff are very busy. Our AAA, that's the largest program at Land to Sky. All the regional councils in North Carolina have a AAA program through the Older Americans Act at the federal level. And I don't know if you've seen recently, you might have seen some ads on WLOS, but we received the additional funding through the CARES Act to support older adults. And so we're trying to get the word out about those resources. So if you have any questions or would like to inquire on the services that are available for older adults in our community, you know, certainly reach out to me. Our director of our aging programs is Leanne Tucker, and there's a listing of some of the programs that we have on this slide. Our Economic Community Development Department, that's led by Erica Anderson. And again, they do lots of different things. Our transportation planning, our the French Broad MPO, and actually includes Haywood County. So for transportation, our region, Land of Sky, includes Haywood County. For other purposes, that Haywood is in the Southwestern Commission. But they do a lot of services for our local governments, economic development. Certainly the ECD team works with our local economic developers. So just recently they helped secure some grants that were part of the Pratt & Whitney project. And they work on many other projects as well. This is our transportation team. So the MPO helps determine what transportation projects will be moving forward in our region. That includes public transit, bikeways, greenways. I don't know if you've heard about the Hellbender Trail, but it's our regional trail plan, and which has got a lot of attention and something I know they're very proud of, but it, you know, that's a long-term project and will require lots of resources to ultimately implement. Mountain Area Workforce Development Board, which I also serve a part of as director. We have a board made up of a majority of private sector employers, and these, you can see a list of the logos of those employers on the screen. And we have programs to help job seekers, but also programs to help youth. Primarily it's for out of school youth. And most of the funding that we receive through the Workforce Board is actually provided through contracts to our contractors in our region, which include AB Tech, Blue Ridge Community College, Goodwill, Henderson County Schools, Madison County Schools, and some others. And our transportation center, we have several contracts with Buncombe County. We help provide administration for Mountain Mobility, which is the transit service that's operated through Buncombe County. And we also help oversee their non-emergency Medicaid transportation, and which helps arrange thousands of trips each year, many for healthcare reasons, but for other reasons as well. So that's just a brief overview of Land to Sky Regional Council. I'm sorry I wasn't able to play the video today, but I will open up the discussion. So if anyone has any questions they want to share today, I'd be glad to take those questions. And again, you can reach out to me at nathan@landosky.org. And again, I apologize, I failed to send out the link for today's meeting. So as you can tell, I dropped the ball on several things. So maybe I'll learn next time how to share videos on a Zoom screen. But does anyone have any questions about Land to Sky? Well, I appreciate y'all joining us today. I don't want to take too much of your time. We do record these calls, and you can go back to them in future reference, and we try to place those on our website at landosky.org. And again, we won't meet next week, but on December 3rd, we'll have the state treasurer for North Carolina. So again, thank you for joining me and joining us. And you can reach out to me at any time or our staff just that there, our contact information is available through our website. So thank you so much. Stay safe, stay well, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you.